The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, the Samurai Blue started a new cycle under Hajime Moriyasu over the past few days. A couple of South American opponents provided a very stiff opposition for the Japanese national team.
Yeah, it was good that there was that. Often the South Americans, they come across the world, they're kind of half in it. They don't really want to play. And Japan have a bit of an easier time of it than usual. But yeah, that certainly wasn't the case here. Full credit to both Uruguay and Colombia, both coming with somewhat depleted sides, but played very well and gave Japan plenty to consider going forward.
They did indeed. Yes, so Uruguay last Friday night ended 1-1. And tonight, Tuesday, as a Sam and I record, Japan have slipped to a 2-1 defeat at the hands of the Colombians down in Osaka. And just to kick things off, Sam, it's good to know that Hajime Moriyasu isn't the greatest troll of all time, because he finally bowed to public opinion and handed Kaoru Toma a couple of starts here. So it's good to know that, yes, he does have two operating eyes after all.
Yeah, that is delightful. I mean, was I surprised that he started? Probably still a little bit of shock. I mean, it seemed like no one in their right mind could have not started Mitoma in these two games. Thankfully, yeah, he's managed to do that. Thankfully, it was at left wing as well, not left back. So, yeah, all signs were positive right at the start of the week.
Absolutely. And yeah, Mitoma almost got Japan going against Uruguay in just the third minute when he made a dash from just inside the Uruguayan half. But he was eventually crowded out by about three defenders. Well, tonight against Colombia, he did give Japan a perfect start in just the third minute, rising to head home a lovely cross in from the right from his former Kawasaki Frontale teammate Hidemasa Morita. And a goal that so many of the crowd at the Yodoku Sakura Stadium were there to see, and they were rewarded in just the third minute, Sam.
Yeah, terrific goal. Really good work, actually, from Morita pulling out onto that right-hand side. And it's a fantastic ball in. And Mitoma, we've seen it a couple of times for Brighton, where he just gets onto that last defender at the back post and can tower over them for a header. It's a great weapon for a winger to have. And yeah, it was a terrific header. No chance for the goalkeeper. And it seemed like a perfect platform for Japan to go on and win this game. So yeah, really good start. And it was nice to see, because first game, you mentioned the run that he had from deep, and he had a couple of those, but really Japan in that first game, and even in this second game, struggled to get him involved high up the pitch. It was always left to him to work from deep and kind of create it himself. So there are lots of things that still need to be worked on, but it's good to see that there's at least that link with Morita, his former Frontale player. And yeah, if they can get a few more of this, it's going to be a real good weapon for Japan.
Indeed. Now, there were seven players who retained their spot in the starting 11 from the Uruguay game, Sam. So I guess we might have hoped for some better combination play between the Japanese players. Did you feel we got any of that at all, really, in the Colombia game? Or was it another fairly disjointed performance that I guess you kind of come to expect in national team fixtures, at least when they're not in camp for, two or three weeks before any sort of meaningful games are played?
Yeah, I thought it was quite disjointed. I thought both games were quite disjointed, really, going forward. And it's mainly because Moriyasu, you still want Japan really to take control of a game and really control it and, yeah, build and really impress on the opposition. But they're still picking players that are based on defending from the front first. And like you saw that with Asano in that first game. This one, it was Machino who was there, and he pressed really hard, but there wasn't anything really sticking to him. He wasn't combining. And Nishimura was in behind him. And again, he was there for his running more than anything else. So whenever Japan had the ball, nothing really worked. Nothing really was linked up. The main creator in Kamada, who I don't think has played very well for Japan for a long while now, other than that USA game, but he was deeper here. He got on the ball a bit more, but not in the right areas. So yeah, it wasn't really linking up very well. Like, even in that first game, you've got, I thought occasionally it looked nice with Kamada and Doan, but very occasionally. And even in the second half here, when you've got those link-up players of Doan and Kubo on at the same time, nothing ever worked. I just think with those two, eventually they'll combine for the most eye-catching goal that Japan have ever scored. But we are going to have to sit through like 99 times out of 100. They're all not on the same wavelength. They're not really linking. And yes, maybe they need a bit more time to play together, but they've both been in the squad national team for a long time now, and it still isn't working. They're still not finding that recipe in behind the striker and with the striker. So it's disappointing. There's still plenty of time, obviously, to work on it. But yeah, the signs weren't great in these two games.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a number of question marks around a number of the key players in and around the front four. And yeah, he's clearly not settled on a group of four that he's happy with, I don't think. But yeah, he does continue to give Kamada chances, both as a 10 and yet today deeper as one of the two sixes. So I wonder how much more string he's going to give Kamada, because again, Doan, where is he best suited? Obviously against Uruguay he started out on the right. That means that Junior Ito can't start. I wonder if Doan is Japan's best 10, but again, when he's been given opportunities from the start of games, he often has floundered as well. So I think he's certainly got to you can't blame him for mixing and matching, because nothing has really clicked yet apart from maybe Ito on the right. That's something we know that we can rely on as supporters of Japan. And hopefully these two games, Mitoma's shown Moriyasu enough that he deserves to be a fixture from the start out there. But definitely up front and behind a main striker, if he is to operate with that formation going forward, then there's certainly a number of contenders, and somebody's really got to stake a claim for that position, don't they, Sam? Because I mean, you could say that Kamada has definitely done that for his club at Frankfurt, but yes, in terms of performances for the national team in recent months and including the World Cup, he just hasn't quite done it, has he?
No, he hasn't. But Japan really have never, not for a long time, haven't got that number 10 to work. And they kind of went away from it in the World Cup to a back three, really. So I wonder if it's worth going for that three-man midfield that you saw when Moriyasu changed up against Australia and then for the rest of qualifying. So if you have Kamada as a deeper one with Endo and Morita, and maybe that gives him a little bit more freedom, a bit more space to move into, rather than everyone kind of just collapsing in on each other in that number 10 position. There's very rarely any space, and they try all the intricate build up and it never really works. So yeah, I'd like to see a little bit more of that. I still think the centre forward needs to change as well. I've not seen anything from these games that suggests to me that Furuhashi shouldn't be in the squad and shouldn't be starting. Like, I understand that maybe he's not played as well as he could do for Japan, but I've not seen anyone else put their hand up and state their case to be the number one striker. I think Ueda's maybe been the best, and he's just got some curse on him at the moment that nothing is going to go in for him. So yeah, there's just still a lot of things to work on. I think move away from that number 10 just to create a bit more space, because yeah, I just think Kamada has often found himself kind of lost in that position.
Indeed, indeed. All right. So, yes, we mentioned Mitoma gave Japan the lead on Tuesday night, very, very early doors. Or just past the half hour, Colombia equalized. And then just past the hour, took a sensational lead with an overhead kick from around the penalty spot after Schmidt had saved an attempt with his face. So, fair play and full credit to the Colombians, Sam. They didn't make the most of their time, in inverted commas, in Japan. They came to play. They came to give Japan a stern test, and they definitely did that. And we even got a Falcao sighting at the end there, the 37-year-old veteran striker still going strong. And, he was up for a scrap as well. We can take away a number of things from the two games, though, as far as Japan are concerned. And one of them is that Moriyasu seems convinced on who his number one goalkeeper will be going forward. Daniel Schmidt played 90 minutes in both games. That meant that Keisuke Osako and Kosei Tani were unused substitutes in both games. So we can get behind that decision. If he's chosen one, then and we assumed that Schmidt was next cab off the rank that that yes, there's no point giving Osako and Tani scraps of minutes here and there. I mean, Schmidt's his man, so it looks like that's how it's going to be going forward.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think Schmidt was right to play the 290 minutes because he's not had too many starts recently for Japan. So get him in there, get him settled with his back line. It's such an important combination on the field. You need him to be confident with the defence in front of him. You need the defence to be confident in him. And I think he played pretty well. I think he made a number of very good saves, especially against Colombia. Didn't have too many errors. I think maybe his distribution could be slightly better if I'm going to pick slight faults with him, but I mean, Japan's goalkeepers have never really been great with distribution, so we have to deal with that. He was not making silly errors. His handling was usually pretty good. So I think it was two solid performances. I would have thought he should have been the number one earlier than this, to be honest. I think he's played consistently well in Belgium. I think he's playing at a higher level than Shuichi Gonda. So I'm glad to see him get his opportunity. And yeah, he's done himself no harm with his two performances.
Absolutely. Now, I guess we're kind of working from the back forward. So, yeah, three of the back four started both games, Sam. Ko Itakura at centre-back for both games. Hiroki Ito started at left-back against Uruguay and then shifted over to centre-back tonight. So Kashif Bangunagande of FC Tokyo could make his Japan national team debut on the left side of the back four. Well, Yukinari Sugawara was the starting right-back and played in 90 minutes in both games. And, for me, he's probably one of the, in inverted commas, success stories of the two games. I thought he was decent defensively and also looked to pick a pass going forward. It was a lovely ball about 20 minutes into the Uruguay game for Asano, wasn't there, when Asano might have done better had he taken a better touch, but he fired in to the side netting after basically taking himself a yard or two wider than he needed to be with that first touch. But the ball in from Sugawara was excellent. So, whether he's properly staked a claim for that berth, whether we'll see Hiroki Sakai come in closer to the start of World Cup qualifying towards the end of the year, we don't know. But for me, Sugawara's enhanced his chances, and I'm sure he'll be a fixture in squads going forward.
Yeah, completely agree with you. I think of all the players that came into the squad that haven't been regulars before, he was the absolute standout. I mean, prior to the squad, thinking who could come in, like a lot of people would suggest Sugawara, and I haven't seen a great deal of him. I don't have time to watch enough Dutch football, and he's obviously playing a lot for AZ Alkmaar, and you can see why there was the clamour for him, I thought, especially in that first game. As you say, the passing forward, the movement into space, the ability to carry it forward, I thought was very, very good, solid enough defensively. And then the link-up, I thought, with Junya Ito, especially when he came on at the start of in the second half against Uruguay and starting tonight, I thought, it was really good. So he was, the standout, I thought. He's still got competition, obviously. Sakai, I don't think he's necessarily completely done with the national team. I'm sure he'll try and press a claim for the Asian Cup. You've still got Miki Yamane who can come in, so it's not absolutely nailed on that he's going to be the starting right back from now on. But I thought he was fantastic. I thought his two performances were very good. And again, like Schmidt, I think he's pressed his claim very well. And he's only 22. So it looks like there's a really good option there. I'm just going over to the left back situation. We saw Bangunagande start there today. How do you think he did? Do you think he's pressed his claim? And likewise with Hiroki Ito, who started there in the first game.
Yeah, I think, Ito appears to be a favourite of Moriyasu's now, and I guess his versatility plays a fairly large role in that situation. As we saw across the two games, he was able to start for his manager in two different positions. As far as Kashif, he battled on, I thought. He didn't necessarily look out of place, tried to play the ball forward whenever possible, and didn't seem overawed by the occasion, which is, is half the battle in your first appearance for the full national team. It was interesting, and Peter mentioned it in our Patreon and only line group. There was, certainly no room for sentiment as far as Moriyasu is concerned, because in the first game played in Tokyo, Ayumu Seko, the former Cerezo Osaka player, started alongside Itakura at centre-back. And then tonight, down in Osaka, yes, Kashif, the Tokyo player, made his first appearance for Japan. So, yeah, whether Moriyasu purposely did it that way, so there wouldn't be as much focus on those two players playing for Japan in their home cities. Maybe, yes, that was how it was staged by the coach. But, yeah, well, I mean, I'm obviously looking at things through red and blue tinted glasses, Sam. So maybe you're the better judge. How did you think Kashif stood up to the occasion?
Yeah, I think he was fine. I don't go any further than that. I think he's played pretty well. He was, as you say, looking to go forward a lot more, which I think was a lot better than Ito there, because Ito's kind of in the, he's not really a left back. And I know he likes to play these kind of centre-backs playing at left-back. Yuta Nakayama's played there a lot. But I just don't think he's got any sort of connection with Mitoma. I don't think he's comfortable going forward. And then he plays centre-back here, and I'm still not convinced he's a centre-back in a back four either. I don't think he was particularly great in here. Obviously, he's playing a lot for Stuttgart, but he's left-sided centre-back. And yeah, I think he just likes him and he wants him in there, but I don't think there's a role necessarily in this formation. I think Banganagande was a lot better going forward. I thought he was quite confident. He didn't seem overawed, as you said, by the occasion, and he didn't do himself any, he didn't do himself an injustice. I thought he was fine, but I'm not going to say that he's come out blown me away and thought, there's our left back for the next 10 years. I won't go anywhere near that. I think that's still going to be a position that's up for grabs for a number of players to hopefully, some, and hopefully then someone takes it on. But yeah, I thought he did okay. And yeah, that was quite strange, though. Seko not playing in Osaka, and Banganagande not playing in Tokyo. And I think he's got precedent for this. I'm pretty sure that they played in Kobe and he didn't play Furuhashi and he played him in the other games. I don't know if it's just taking the pressure off, or he just hates the people and hates the public. I'm not sure. It could be more of that. But yeah, interesting. But yeah, did fine, did fine.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think we kind of agreed before he was named in the squad that, yeah, we weren't sure whether he was really up to that level. And you said last week there's only one way to find out if he's if he is, and that's to throw him in and see if he sinks or swims. And yeah, for a first test in a samurai blue shirt, I think he did okay, as you say. And yeah, whether that'll be enough to keep him in the squads going forward, maybe as some players return from injury or others, yeah, stand out in their teams in their different leagues around the world, well, we'll wait and see. But yeah, for a debut, he's yeah, I think he can be fairly happy with yeah, with his first appearance for Japan. Can Kashif? So yeah, other standouts, I guess, in midfield, Morita was his yeah, usual dependable self, but obviously still does give the ball away a little bit carelessly for mine on too many occasions. He had Wataru Endo, his captain, alongside him against Uruguay, but yeah, as we mentioned, Kamada started deeper against Colombia tonight. And then I guess, yeah, further forward, as you said, Asano started against Uruguay. It was Machino for the first 45 minutes against Colombia before ISA Wada came on and had two terrific headed chances about 20 minutes into the second half after Colombia had taken a 2-1 lead. But yes, the Colombian keeper was equal to the task on both of those occasions. The first one, a terrific low save from a lovely header from Wada that we yeah, I think we'd almost counted our chickens. That was in before the keeper got down to pour it away. And yeah, one of the other, well, I guess he's a success story because he scored Japan's equaliser against Uruguay and was rewarded with a start tonight against Colombia, is Takuma Nishimura, Sam, of Yokohama F. Marinos. I mean, we mentioned it last week, his journey from relegated Sendai in 2021 to winning J1 with the Yokohama F. Marinos in 2022. And then, yes, coming back into the national team fold and scoring the equaliser against Uruguay last Friday night, combining with a fellow substitute, Junior Ito, for a first-time finish, basically straight through the keeper, but from such close range, the keeper, I guess, yeah, he might have saved it, or would have expected to save it, but yeah, Nishimura was able to notch his goal for Japan. It was a tremendous for him, a tremendous moment. And I kind of mentioned that nobody was blinking an eye over the fact that Nishimura was included ahead of the likes of Takumi Minamino in this squad. And do you feel he's enhanced his chances going forward with his performances in these two games?
I mean, obviously the goal doesn't harm him. I mean, it was a fantastic way to start, first touch scoring within about 10 seconds or something. So, yeah, that was a magnificent way to enter. I thought he did his job in the game tonight. I think he was there to press more so than anything else, and I think he did that well. He was full of energy. I don't think he linked up particularly well, to be quite honest. But I'm not really sure if that was his role or not. It just seemed to be in there to cause a nuisance and to press the opposition. He did that fine. I think, it was okay. I still expect a little bit more in there. Just with the quality of player that Japan has in that sort of position, you just want a little bit more creativity, a bit more in there. And like, he did okay again. But yeah, I don't see him necessarily as a permanent option there. I think he can have a use in the squad. I think he could be a very useful addition in a 23-26 man squad, but I think there are better options to start in that number 10 position if that's the way that Japan are going to go. But it's taken nothing away from him. I mean, yeah, as you say, his journey has been magnificent from being one of the biggest J-League mysteries, why the struggling Vigalta Sendai couldn't find a place for him in their starting 11 throughout that season. And, obviously your omission of him in the pre-season for the previews last year. So he's gone through that and he's got into the national team and he's doing well. So, yeah, fair play to him, but I still think there are better options in that position.
Yeah, fair enough then. Nishimura basically got through an hour tonight before he was replaced by Takefusa Kubo, who had it was quite a cameo, wasn't it, Sam? He's by now I think he's almost got to be categorized as one of the great enigmas of Japanese football. I mean, he's still so not so young anymore, but he's still got a lot of room for improvement, you would hope, at his age and the way that he's the way that we've seen him develop over the years. But I wonder, in a situation like this where he's come on with half an hour to go, was he just simply pressing too hard tonight? Was he trying too hard to impress Moriyasu and to stand out? Because basically everything he tried just made him look silly, and curling a corner into the side netting at the near post. I mean, he got bundled over, and his the man who tripped him got a yellow card, and Kubo fronted up to him, but simply bounced straight off him, and he went straight back down to the floor. He couldn't really find any space to operate, either to pick a pass or to get a clean shot away. And I don't know. That's just kind of emblematic of my recent memories of him in a Japan shirt. Anyway, it's gotten to the point where while he was once the great white hope for the Samurai Blue, he just can't seem to get out of his own way at times.
No, I'm trying to remember the last time Kubo had a really great game in a Japan shirt, and I'm struggling to really think of one. Obviously, he's got so much talent, and yeah, he's playing well for Sociedad, a very good Spanish team. He starts the vast majority of games there, so there's obvious quality. But yeah, I'd like to have an interview with him to see what sort of pressure he feels, because he's obviously been bigged up from almost the moment he was born. Like, Kubo forever has been this talk about he is the next talent, he is going to be like a world superstar. And he's 21 now, he's had a fine career so far, but he's not taken off in the way that you think he would do. And he does look like he's trying too hard. He's really aiming for that perfect pass through, that perfect little thing. And he kind of gets in his own head, and sometimes it just doesn't come off, or he overthinks things. And yeah, it was just it was a weird cameo for him. Like, just the bump off, I can't remember who he was, which Ever Colombo, and he's knocked over, stands up, tries to square up to him. I mean, you're half the size of him, bounces off him onto his backside. It was just, oh, Take, what are you doing? Stop it. You're making a fool of yourself. And it was just another one of those games. It's so often, I think, and it's him and Doan to a degree, not as much Doan, but they both have such ability, and they just trying everything, trying to have like the perfect goal, and it just doesn't work. And I think he needs to simplify himself, and I think he needs to be kind of, he needs some sort of coaching to him, just to pick the simpler passes, just to kind of take a breath when he's on the ball and then build into it a little bit more. Because yeah, it just seems like it's got this, he's got half an hour to impress, I've got to do everything that I can do, and yeah, in the end none of it really came off.
Yeah, I mean, like the goal that Nishimura scored against Uruguay, right? I mean, it's a ball in from Ito. It's a first-time shot on target from Nishimura. And, it goes through the keeper, but it goes into the back of the net. There's so many other Japan national team players who would have been watching that moment and would have thought, well, why doesn't that ever happen for me? Why doesn't a ball come through to me right in that perfect position where I can just hit it and don't have to think about it? But Nishimura, I don't know, he just doesn't have that pressure on himself or something, or that's the way he's used to scoring goals for Yokohama F. Marinos. I mean, making that, that later run into the box and timing it perfectly and meeting a ball in from, usually from Kota Mizunuma or from El Burr, and on this occasion from Junior Ito. And, he knows where he needs to be, whereas, a player like Kubo, I mean, not necessarily in the same position as Nishimura, obviously, and not counted on to do the same things, but Nishimura was able to put the ball in the net with a minimum of fuss. And I mean, and the player I talked about last week, Minamino, I mean, you could imagine him trying to take the ball down and take two touches before trying to beat the keeper from about 10 yards out. But whereas Nishimura just slotted it away and, thought about the rest, how he was going to celebrate later on. So, Nishimura, a great moment for him scoring. And you're right, I don't think he tore up any trees tonight against Colombia in a start, but yeah, did get through an hour, and he will have made an impression on Moriyasu, I'm sure, over the course of the two games. So anybody else who we need to mention from, if you want to cast your mind back to the Uruguay game, Sam, because there were some different players used in that game. As we said, Seco started at centre back in that one. Asano, I don't think we really need to talk about Asano over the course of the two games, do we? But anybody I've left out from either games that you would like to mention?
Yeah, I think I should give props to Junior Ito, especially in the second half. When he came on against Uruguay, he kind of turned the game in Japan's favour there. It's just that dynamic approach. He's like, he's just going to get his head down, he's going to run, he's going to put in very good balls. Obviously, the ball in from Nishimura was magnificent, and a couple of times that delivery was really good. He just knows where he's going to play it. He doesn't have to think, and it's a ball in. It's just, that's probably the difference, isn't it, between Ito and players like Kubo. He just knows what to do. He just knows he's going to get it in. He knows what his job is. He gets the ball in. He doesn't overthink things. And he usually creates chances. He was like Japan's best player for qualifying for the World Cup. Then was kind of forced into wing back, so we didn't really see the best of him in that competition. But I thought, yeah, especially when he came on Friday and for parts in this game, I thought he was really good. He's usually Japan's best outlet. And yeah, proved that again. I thought the partnership with Sugawara showed real good signs of blossoming. So yeah, I'd definitely pick him out. And otherwise, I'd say maybe Itakura, who's come through now, is like, he's going to be first choice. And you think Yoshida probably hasn't got too much longer left. Tomiyasu seems to be injured every 5 seconds. So a lot of pressure is going to come up on Itakura. And he was dealing with an inexperienced back line around him. And I think he was measured. I thought he was composed and played very well. So yeah, pick those two out, and yeah, especially Itakura probably, because yeah, it must have been quite difficult to like playing with players with very little experience around them. And to be honest, Itakura hasn't played too many games either for the national team, so I thought it was a composed performance from him. Anyone else that you would like to pick out positively or negatively?
I agree with Itakura. Yeah, because as you say, he's kind of been third choice at centre back for most of the last cycle, right? But it looks like circumstances will work in his favour now going forward, and he'll be one of the first names on the team sheet. And yeah, unfortunately for Wada, he didn't get his goal tonight. But those two headed chances in quick succession midway through the second half, I think, were positive signs for him that at this level that he can, you know, he can fashion chances, he can get on the end of things. We know that he can do it for Kashima. We've seen that he can do it for his club as he's been bordering on prolific this season over in Belgium. So yeah, terrific for him to get a couple of opportunities here and with those two chances, just two glimpses of goal in the second half of this game. Hopefully that will spur him on to greater heights in a Japan shirt, because if Moriyasu just does not fancy calling on Furuhashi at all, then for me it looks like Wada and Daisen Maeda, when he is fit, will fight out the battle to be Moriyasu's number nine. Although of course there is always Takuma Asano looming, isn't there? And he's obviously got he's one of Moriyasu's pets. So we'll wait and see how it all shakes out in the months to come. But for me, Wada a positive cameo in the second half against Colombia. We'll move on then. I think overall the Samurai Blue have they were two difficult opponents, no question, but they have kind of wasted a golden opportunity, Sam, here to continue on the could have been a golden era in Japanese sport. I'm sure you're aware that Japan won the World Baseball Classic last week by defeating the United States in the final. That has obviously just been given wall-to-wall coverage over here in the Japanese media for days and days after the event, never mind when it was actually going on. And yeah, Japan playing on Friday night at home at the National Stadium in Tokyo had the perfect opportunity to kind of grab some of those headlines and make people talk positively about football for a change, when there was so much attention being given to the baseball in the early stages of the J1 season. And I guess they've kind of dropped the ball a little bit with those two performances. If they had have really shone and really impressed, then the buzz over the Japan national team might have lingered a lot longer into the resumption of J1. But as I say, two difficult opponents who did come to give Japan stern tests and were successful in doing so. So in terms of sporting spectacles, they were decent affairs. But just a shame that Japan, the Samurai Blue, couldn't take a little bit of that shine off the Samurai Japan baseball team and take some of the glory for themselves.
Yeah, I'm not sure these two games are taking too many column inches in the morning papers. I think this was a chance for it. Yeah, as you say, I think Japan, if they could have taken this on board, gone really positive, controlled games and got two good results. They're good named opposition in Colombia and Uruguay, but they're not the greatest teams. Like, Uruguay didn't get out of their group in the World Cup and came with a weakened side as well. It's a game, really, you'd expect Japan at the moment, especially if you want to be top eight in the World Cup. These are the games you have to, these are the types of opposition you have to go and really assert your authority on. You need to go out and win them. And they weren't able to do that. They weren't. Mm. They were still playing a little bit too negatively for me. I just really want to see one day Japan really take control of a game by the scruff of the neck, outplay an opposition, rather than trying to rely on counterattacks or counter pressures and that sort of thing, kind of reactive football rather than proactive. They didn't do that here. Colombia, again, without a lot of players, they didn't qualify for the last World Cup. It's not a vintage Colombia side. It was a difficult team. They played well, but again, I think you wanted more from Japan. So it was disappointing in that respect, but they're two friendly games. They were mixed and matched squads, trying out new players. I don't want to get too hard on them at the moment, but I want to see a progression going forward. I want to see, especially when it comes to the Asian Cup, that's a competition Japan have to try and dominate in. They should be controlling the ball against every team in Asia. And I'm not seeing it at the moment, but there's still plenty of time to go.
Indeed, indeed. All right then. So yeah, a draw against Uruguay and a 2-1 defeat at the hands of Colombia are the Samurai Blues' two results over the course of this international break. Let's finish off this episode, Sam, by looking ahead to J1 Match Day 6 as the top flight resumes on Friday night with the winless Kashiwa hosting Urawa Reds, who are coming in on the back of three straight wins. Their tails are definitely up, and that will be a very interesting game at Hitachi Dai. And then we have the other eight games from the round all taking place on Saturday. So, Sam, the punters are waiting eagerly for Sam's pick of the weekend. What is it?
Sam's pick of the weekend.
Oh, I've got two here. I'm going to start with Kashima versus Sanfrecce Hiroshima. Both teams in mid-table, both same with an okay start to the season. Kashima obviously with the two victories, but against teams like Kyoto played terribly on the opening day, and then the other victory against Yokohama FC. So we're waiting to see if they can put in a performance and get a result against one of the stronger teams in the league that they haven't managed to so far. And again, Hiroshima have not got the points that they would expect to have they haven't got the goals that they would expect to have. But I think this is a really interesting game for both teams. I think both will have eyes on the title, maybe, well, at least Champions League football. Yeah, so yeah, this is a really interesting one. So I can't picture which way it's going to go. I think it's a really intriguing tie. And the other one I want to pick out is Kyoto Sanga versus Vissel Kobe. Obviously, Kobe top of the league, riding high against our Kyoto team that have found their way. And yeah, three victories. I think they've done really well to kind of come away from that first performance. They've changed their tactics up a bit. They look a really decent side, but can they continue that? Or is the break going to knock them back and then they'll drop down the table? So yeah, those are two really interesting games. The other interesting bit of this is, why are Sapporo the late game? Aren't they always the early kickoff? So that's really odd. I'm not sure I'm going to get used to that. But yeah, it looks a really interesting set of fixtures. Anything that you'd like to pick out? Tokyo and Tosa, you never normally look forward to that game.
Oof, geez, our annual battering, down at the real estate agent in front of the station stadium. Yeah, talk about a bogey team. Tosu are definitely that for FC Tokyo. So I have absolutely zero expectations of a result for my team heading into that game. Elsewhere, yeah, you mentioned Sapporo, the late game. It's the NHK BS1 game at 7 p.m. on Saturday, and that is actually one of the games I wanted to mention, Sam, because how many times over the last 6 or 7 years has Kawasaki Frontale been an underdog in a game, would you say? I reckon you could count them on one hand. You could probably count them on one or two fingers, and for me, they might just about be underdogs to Consadole in this game because, we know what Sapporo are capable of on a week-to-week basis. They're very inconsistent, but on their day, they can absolutely turn up and put on a show. And they will look to do that against Frontale here up at the Sapporo Dome with the bright lights on them at 7 o'clock on Saturday night. That should be a terrific game, I think. I was going to say Kyoto and Kobe if you didn't, and I'm surprised you didn't put the Mockers on the Yokohama FC again, because they will go looking for their first victory of the season again at the sixth time of asking when they host Fukuoka, who are, of course, coming in on the back of a four-game unbeaten run. So, the two teams that Sam and I had down in our bottom three of our J-Pred, they are facing off at Mitsuzawa Stadium, but they're in vastly different positions in the table. Yokohama FC, the hosts, are bottom, but Fukuoka flying high in fourth, and we'll wait and see if Yokohama FC can finally break their duck. The other team looking to win for the first time this year are Gamba Osaka, and they travel to Shonan at 3 o'clock on Saturday. Shonan obviously haven't won since the opening day. And for Gamba, we'll wait and see if Kosei Tani
reclaims
his spot between the sticks, because he will be returning as a Gamba player to play against Shonan at the Lemon Gas Stadium. So we'll wait and see if Tani is picked by Danny Poyatos or not. But up and down the country, up and down the slate, there are interesting fixtures, no question, in J1 Match Day 6. And Sam, I guess it's always nice to turn the page on the national team and refocus on the top flight, isn't it? And yes, we've got a full slate of games to round up next week, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, it is a lot nice to get away from the national team. I don't enjoy the national team periods with Japan, to be quite honest. So it's good to get back to the J-League, and I think we've got a fantastic slate of games. I think you could look at any one of those games. I think that could be tie of the round. So, yeah, really looking forward to it. And Reysol Reds, Friday Night Football should be a really exciting one. If it's anything like Reysol's 3-3 draw with Avispa Fukuoka at the weekend in the Levain Cup, an absolute belter, and you don't normally expect that with Avispa defending.
No, absolutely. All right, yeah, so don't worry, listeners, yeah, we will fill you in on the Levain Cup maybe around the semi-final stage. So, yes, nice for Sam to sneak in a mention there. But, yeah, so we'll leave it there, and you won't be surprised, listeners, to find out that, yeah, Sam and I have gotten about 40 minutes of podcasting out of two fairly meandering national team games with a bit of a bright spark at the end there previewing the return of J1. So, yeah, we'll leave it there. That's it for this episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. And we'd like to thank you, listeners, for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to review J1 Match Day 6. Speak to you then. Bye for now.
The J-Talk podcast.